I said last week that this is not a good week to come and challenge me if you want to defend religion because I was on a warpath? This is the opposite of that week, because, man, I am tired. I have taken a break from the arduous task of moving both my office, the studios of Ask an Atheist, and my home into a new location. So I am basically without sleep and a little loopy, and it's a bit strange. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Give us a call if you got one in ya. And to help me out and to help keep me grounded on Earth today, I've got Nick Kennedy. How you doing?
I'm feeling fantastic.
Awesome. And Dan Lombardo, how are you?
Great as usual.
Awesome. So yeah, it's like I said, I'm feeling a little loopy. I'm also feeling a little excited, a little happy that the Earth is continuing to do its thing. You know?
Yeah, we're all still here.
Yeah, as if we ever thought that it was going to end. If we thought that, you know, Harold Camping was right last year, obviously.
Yeah, this apocalypse is a lot less fun than last year's apocalypse.
Yeah, we had a party at Dorky's last year. I mean, this apocalypse kind of sucked.
I think it's just sort of an effect of we're like chasing the apocalypse dragon's tail kind of thing. Yeah. Like every apocalypse is just not going to get as excited as the last one did.
Well, if you go to wecantknow.com, the website that kind of got the attention for the Harold Camping thing, that got Becky in the news, that got me quoted in
and it got me standing behind Becky jangling my
keys.
That's
right. It was you and Becky. Yeah. That's become like a weird iconic photograph. People like recognize Becky now from that picture. It's quite interesting. If you go to that website, instead of just having the one countdown now, we've got several countdowns, including the Mayan apocalypse or the Mayan apocalypse or the Mayo apocalypse. Isaac Newton's end of the world scenario, Richard Wayland's end of the world scenario, the year 2038 problem for Unix. I think the real end of the world is when Kent Hovind gets released from prison.
Oh, that's actually going to happen?
Yeah, that seems like as good a one as any.
2015, man.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, as you might imagine, if you listen to the show or use the neurons that you've got, the 2012 Mayan... Becky's not here.
Yeah, you better pronounce it the way that, you know, you're going to get wrath when you go home.
Yeah, Becky's not here. I can pronounce it correctly. The Mayan apocalypse clearly didn't happen. And something that we talked about back in March, we're not hearing about mass suicides or anything weird at Mount Bougaroc in France. HuffPost reported that two gentlemen were arrested for wielding machetes and gas masks, but that's about it.
Were these guys associated with the cultists, or did they just happen to be in the same place wielding machetes with gas masks on?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it might have been some weird LARP going on.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? And it turns out that, France sent police and paramilitary representatives, and there's a sort of a weird scenario where the majority of people at this town were there in case something happened. And as far as people who were there to actually go to the spiritual mountain, it was basically a no-show.
Right.
Did people actually learn from Marshall Applewhite and the...
I don't know that they learned... I guess if Marshall Applewhite had one lesson to teach, it would be don't kill yourself because of a comet. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess that works. So we're going to take a few minutes to talk about some of these now that we can fully show you that these things are kind of silly. So... You know, one of the things that you talked about last week, Dan, is sort of the tendency for people with 2012 phenomena to want something celestial to happen, to want a rock or a galactic plane shift.
Sure. The problem with celestial apocalypse scenarios is that anything that's going on sort of outside the Earth in the realm of astronomy... is very closely watched and very well documented.
Yeah.
We had a near miss with an asteroid not that long ago, but it was known well in advance that it wasn't going to hit us. It was going to, you know, pass close, but even so, it wasn't that big.
What's interesting about those near-Earth asteroid, the near-Earth asteroid program with NASA is that it's called Space Guard, which is named after an Arthur C. Clarke concept that he put in several of his novels.
I thought it was a 3M product.
Where organizations like the ESA and NASA and stuff like that got together and charted near-Earth asteroids. So it's another thing that Arthur C. Clarke made.
Fruity. Yeah, I would like to think that if something like that came close enough to even, like, get close enough to hit us, we would have the technology now to blow it to bits.
Well,
I'd like to think
yes
that.
Yes and no.
We just need a good Aerosmith song.
Let me live my lie, Sam.
Technology and capability are two different things, but... the thing is that this is why we track these things, is that so we can detect them well in advance. There's a recent asteroid discovered that they were worried that it would hit the Earth in 40 years, and they did the math and discovered no problem. So, but there are a number of things that people think are going to impact with the Earth. The first one is called Nemesis, and I believe.
I think there was even like an episode of Nova or the Universe or some usually very educational, informative program about that one, where they decided it was like a sort of counterbalancing twin to the sun or something like that.
Yeah, scientists speculate that mass extinctions happen in 26 million year intervals and went searching for extraterrestrial hypotheses to fit their data. Some people invented a brown dwarf star that would periodically cause an earthly mass extinctions, except no data shows that this is true.
Right.
They're talking about like this hidden secret brown dwarf star that exists within the solar system.
Right. I think in the show that I watched, they had proposed that it was somewhere outside of the Oort cloud, which, I mean, granted, if it's something dim like a brown dwarf star would be, and it's outside the Oort cloud, you know, how are we going to see that?
Actually, quite easily.
Well, yeah, from the gravitational effect it would have on other bodies, right?
Or its radiation output. A brown dwarf star isn't...
still putting out infrared.
Yeah, and even if it's within, if it's inside the system Bioshock, it's gonna be really clearly obvious. Brown dwarf stars start at roughly six times the mass of Jupiter, so how are we gonna miss that with the kind of telescopes that we've got these days? You know?
Right.
I like hearing you guys talk science.
Another one, is Nibiru. It's a supposed 12th planet of the solar system invented by self-designed Sumerian scholar Zechariah Sitchin, who hypothesized the existence of a mysterious Earth-sized planet where Sumerian gods dwelled. I think I remember this episode of Atlantis.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites, but only because it's mentioned in a Dr. Steele song.
Okay. The orbit required for a 3,600-year revolution would bring it close to the Earth, would be so unstable that the planet itself would have been ejected from the system long ago. This is the orbital conservation of momentum stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it'd basically be a planet rocket.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a really cool idea, but is it here? Apparently not.
I know, anytime I hear Nibiru mentioned, it's also in the same sentence someone's bound to say, I don't know, reptilian shapeshifters and Masonic like conspiracy theories and stuff
right.
like that.
There's this, okay. Everybody knows that I collect propaganda, or I listen to propaganda, and there's this radio station that I listen to that's basically every ridiculous conspiracy theory and our flawed argument that you would ever care to name. And this week, they've all been talking about how 2012, the Mayan apocalypse is a joke, ignore it. But in the previous weeks, they were talking about how people were going to use the Mayan apocalypse to begin the Georgia Guidestone reduction of Earth's population to kill the useless eaters and stuff like that. And they were talking about the groups involved were awesome. It's the John Birch Society, the UN, the White House, Alex Jones, the Jews. It was
can we get Majestic 12 in there?
No, I'm
how many
sure
more
it's
can
in
we force
somewhere.
Into that crevice?
Yeah, they did mention MK Ultra. I have to admit. if you know about this, there are questions that I have about these conspiracy theories. So this is something that you like to talk about as well. I listen to it, but I'm not an expert. 253-584-1480. And then finally, we have a segment that we haven't done recently. It's Scripture Says
What?
Yeah, exactly. The other one, the other thing that people are expecting to smack into the earth, this one has a particular biblical bent. And this comes to us from Revelation 8. Chapter 8, verse 10. When the third angel blew his trumpet, a huge star blazing like a torch fell from heaven. It fell on one-third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of this star is Wormwood. One-third of the water turned into Wormwood, and many people died from the water because it had turned bitter. Comet, asteroid, invisible planet, dwarf star. What? I mean...
I think maybe you could sort of like run with an absinthe tangent here.
I was wondering if we'd go there.
Maybe
yeah.
this is, you know, predicting like the opium dens of the 1800s and early 1900s.
Maybe they're talking about the revolution in literature that, you know, that yeah, people like to attribute to a drug.
Sure, yeah.
So, whatever.
How does a star turn water into wormwood?
How does a man turn water into wine?
Honestly, there's a lot more to be said for asteroids seeding the Earth with chemicals than there is for a guy happening to turn water into wine.
But I don't know. Everything that I learned about stars and the sun, I learned from They Might Be Giants. You know, so I don't really have much to say on the subject.
You know, you can talk all you like about the Bible, but the thing is, when you start talking about how can asteroids change the properties of water, now you're talking about Cat's Cradle. Stay out of my room. All right. Kurt Vonnegut, man. So I do have a question for you, and this is I've been doing a lot of research on the 2012 thing, mm-hmm. and I've been reading articles and stuff like that because I figured we'd have to talk about it this week. And when I was reading a CNN article about the 2012 phenomenon, it says that apocalyptic scenarios can be rooted in science, religion, or simply a notion. And does that seem accurate to you?
You know, I could say they'd be rooted in science fiction. There have been apocalyptic events on Earth before, but there don't appear to be any that are imminent.
Yeah.
You could say that, you know, because there was a Permian mass extinction or because there was a Pleistocene mass extinction that we're bound to have another. I mean, this is why we're monitoring near-Earth asteroids.
We're in the middle of a mass extinction right now.
Right. We are a mass extinction.
Yeah. The rate of mass extinction, I believe, is now greater than the KT event. I mean, it's a serious thing. It's just that when you look at something in terms of geological time, it looks like it's instantaneous. When it's actually when you look at the actual number of years that take place, it could be hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, I guess if you're really concerned about like the apocalypse 2012 scenario, given the anthropogenic damage that's been done, maybe, you know, the real answer isn't to pray to the elder gods, but simply to, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah, like maybe do something about that carbon dioxide thing.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about my favorite 2012 scenario. It's not somebody we've talked about a lot on the show, and it's sort of a positive one, but it's still kind of crazy. There's this guy named Terence McKenna, and he wrote this thing, I think it was in the 70s, and he did this numerology thing where he used the I Ching and stuff like that and came up with this graph, and it looks like it's on either a very early IBM or on an Apple II, and it's this... It looks like a random graph, right? Except it has this termination at the end. And the idea behind it, and I love this, this is so weird, is that his concept of... All right, Terence McKenna, here's the thing about him, is he's one of those guys that did a lot of psychedelic drugs, and is one of those guys that decided because he had such a time on them that they had to have meant something, right?
Sure,
you know,
sure.
He self-described psychonaut, that sort of thing. So, all right. Right out of the gate, this is drugs. All right, let's just put that out there.
Right.
Right. It's drugs in the I Ching. And it has this thing. And so his idea is that the eschaton, the end of the world, is a teleological attractor that's sort of a magnet for novelty.
All right. So what kind of novelty are we talking about here? Are we talking about just new stuff or like wind-up chattering teeth?
I would like it to be wind-up chattering teeth because suddenly...
For the record, so would I. That would be cool.
That's kind of a nice apocalypse idea. You know, we have whoopee cushions.
And... Yeah. Every chair is a whoopee cushion, and everybody has false teeth, and that's the end of the world. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty amusing. But no, he was talking about unique things. And he had this chart of uniqueness, and it just, for some reason, it terminated in 2012. And then he found out about the 2012 phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
and... decided, oh yeah, okay, so this, he fudged the numbers a little bit, and now we are, his end of the world was everything that happens from here on in is completely novel, is completely new.
Whose perspective, though? I mean, what's novel to someone else's perspective would be completely normal to ours.
You're harshing his buzz. Come on, man.
Sorry, man.
I'm going to have to agree with the idea that everything that occurs is pretty much novel. I mean, the universe is an enormous and complex system, and we don't even know that it's a closed system. So, second law of thermodynamics, the entropy is going to continue to increase. So, things are going to get, you know, a little less orderly and seek lower energy states that they have not yet achieved, but how fast is this really happening? Is it actually an observable thing?
So what is it like living in the post-singularity world?
You know, it seems a lot like the pre-singularity world. Yeah, except the coffee is much worse.
The other thing about Terrence McKenna is you know, with the whole... He was also a fan of this. I love this. This is one of my favorite weird, vaguely creationist, vaguely evolution arguments, is that he was the proponent of the stoned ape theory, which was idea that drugs somehow booted humanity.
Yeah, somewhere an Australopithecus ate some hallucinogenic mushrooms, and bam, technology.
Wow. I mean,
it's a weird idea. It was entirely based on his drug taking, mm-hmm. and had no basis in science, and it clearly had not, you know, it wasn't peer reviewed in any meaningful way. He just wrote a book about it. However, it did spawn some really good bits from Bill Hicks, so whatever. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Bit of a weird day. We're going to talk about stuff other than the apocalypse now. There's a lot going on there that we really need to get into.
The perfect Mormon wife in the perfect Mormon town has a secret. She doesn't believe in God. Her husband has a secret too. He's in love with another man. She's stood by her husband for 2 years, but when she meets a man who calls himself X, an artist traveling through the western states, her resolve to be the perfect wife finally crumbles. Baptism for the Dead, a novel by Libby Hawker, explores one woman's loss of faith in modern-day America. Get your copy today from your favorite ebook retailer. Paperback edition coming soon.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
We're talking about the commercial that just ended, and
good color.
Yeah, it's so Becky, but it took a ton of takes in the studio.
I love that commercial so much.
It's a fun one. So, Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. So we've got some news. You know, we're still in the fallout and in the sort of the social stuff from the shooting. So there's going to be in Connecticut. So there's going to be a lot of that. So let's start with the weird one. An atheist recently paid the town of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, $50 to hang a banner created by the Freedom From Religion Foundation as a public protest against the city for allowing a Christmas tree, a nativity scene, and a menorah to be displayed on public property. However, on Thursday, WNEP-TV filmed Joe McDonald climbing 30 feet up where the banner was hung, cutting it down and replacing it with an American flag. He said, "I just think in the light of the elementary school massacre in Connecticut that we shouldn't be divided as a country over petty stuff like whether there's a god or not or whatever." And it sounds like he's trying to, like, do a thing that's dividing the country or whatever. But he didn't attack the menorah. He didn't attack the Christmas tree as divisive symbols. He went right for the atheism sign. So, but the thing is, he also went to Facebook. He believes in a god, and it was central to why he did what he did. He made it very clear that his belief in God was central to, you know, was exactly why he did it. He said the sign was disrespectful to God-fearing people who are Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, who were the founders of this nation. He also went on to say that atheism is a religion. Yeah, so...
Well, if we're a religion, then does that mean I don't get to pay taxes?
Ha!
That sounds good.
This is a weird argument. This is what happens when you know, things go down and atheists want to be a part, and atheists want to continue to be a part of society and say that we have a place at the table, somebody comes up and says, no, you're divisive because shootings. Because this.
Right.
Because 9/11.
But even then, I could use the same argument for pretty much anything. I could go into the record store and I could take out records that I like and replace them with records that I do like and say, school shootings, this is the reason why, it's divisive and it needs to be done my way.
It can be done for anything. It can be done, and this is what it comes down to, is why is an FFRF sign considered divisive? Because it singles out a group of people. But a Christmas tree isn't divisive because it separates a group of people.
Right.
Or a menorah isn't divisive because it separates a group of people. It's NPR ecumenicalism. As long as you believe in something crazy, you have a place at the table. But if you decide to live by reason and invite other people to be the same way, suddenly we're divisive.
I think we get that a lot as atheists. One of the arguments that we get is like, well, you have to believe in something.
Right.
I believe in science.
Saying that that their religion is good, and atheists who are saying that all religions are wrong are the worst. And I'd have to say, you know, all we're saying is that we think that you are fundamentally mistaken. We're not saying that you're going to burn in hell for all eternity for it. We're not saying that you won't get
as good
an afterlife.
That's not divisive.
All we're saying is you're wrong.
An FFRF sign is divisive, but suggesting that everybody who doesn't believe as you believe is going to burn in hell for all eternity.
Right, that's not divisive.
No, not at all, no.
Yeah, it's... we're just not being given a place at the table. That's what this is why we have shows like Ask an Atheist. And in times like these, people want to double down and get religious. I think we have a right to do the same thing and double down and say, we're not religious. We're Americans. We want to be included, too.
But even then, I'm not telling people that they, you know, shouldn't do what they feel is right. I'm just saying, I'm here, I'm an atheist, and I don't eat babies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Wait, you don't?
Wait, you do eat babies?
Oh, okay.
Oh,
moving on.
I think I've been doing it wrong.
Oh, dear.
Moving on. So, there is some good news. The Atheist Census is back online. The Atheist Census was launched on 7 December and received over 8,000 confirmed entries before it was taken offline by a denial of service attack. So, thing went online, you know, people started following, started filling it in. And then it was suddenly taken offline because of a denial of service attack, which is when people try to flood, you know, ping flood or stuff like that.
Yeah.
We don't know who was behind the attack, but it's a reasonable conclusion that they do not like atheists being counted. Carlos Diaz, president of the AAI, suggests on the organization's website. The census was still down at noontime Monday. I was notified as soon as it happened by our technical team as a deliberate attack, though no one has claimed responsibility. General Manager Tanya Smith said that she's obviously speculating, but there are people out there who do not want atheists being counted.
You know, I think that if you try and silence other people from saying their argument, your arguments must stink.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think that's really a problem, is that, you know, a good solid argument can defend itself against any opponent.
Yeah.
If you don't have a good solid argument, then yeah, every opponent is scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Shut up, Dan, you're wrong, stupid head.
So we actually
stop talking.
We actually have a call. Manolo in Kentucky has some news about the end of the world. How are you doing, Manolo?
Hi, how are you guys?
Doing pretty good. So you're hearing about a bishop in Chile, right?
Yeah. He had a great plan for this whole apocalypse that was going to happen supposedly on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he personally didn't believe that the world was going to end, but if people wanted to leave their properties to the church, they could go. That sounds like a joke, but it's true, people. I mean, this is unbelievable.
Oh, man.
And then he said that he's sure that everybody is going to be alive after the 21st. But, you know, if they give the properties, then we're going to pray for them eternally.
Wow.
Because of leaving those properties to the church. I just couldn't believe it. He's the bishop of Punta Arenas in Chile.
Okay.
Wow.
And his name is Bernardo Bastos Florence. I read the news and I thought it was something out of The Onion, and it turned out to be true. I just couldn't believe it.
I
figured you're going to you get a good laugh out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you could send that to us through the website, if you have a moment, askanatheist.tv. I'll make sure to include a link to that that link in the show notes, because I think people would like to read about that.
Well, it's on our I-35 website.
Oh, it is? Right.
But I can send you the link.
Okay, or so just send me a link to. Yeah, just send me a link to Podcast ATRSR as well. That would be fine. But we're going to have to move on. So thanks for your call.
No problem.
I guess I respect his showmanship and his economic acumen for turning a fake apocalyptic scenario into a naked cash grab.
Right. Yeah. It's like that Rapture Pets thing. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or like a Rapture Relief Program to fund a science camp for kids, or to fund a radio show on Clay 1180 AM.
Right.
Yeah. One that may be hosted by you, Sam.
Perhaps.
He'll never survive the Rapture.
No, clearly not. All right, so, you know, not all news is weird news or good news. As you know, we've been talking a lot about blasphemy laws in the United in the United States and throughout the world. And just this weekend, there was another situation in Pakistan where a supposed blasphemer was lynched and burned to death in front of police. In the Pakistani town of Dadu, an unidentified man was lynched in front of the police. According to a prayer leader, the man was a traveler who spent the night in a local mosque. He offered prayers on Thursday and spent the night there. And when we came to the mosque for Fajr prayers, we found charred copies of the Quran, said Usman Mimon, a prayer leader. The man was then handed over to police, the traveler. As word reached the village, locals mobbed the station, overpowered the 10 stationed police officers, beat the suspect severely, and set him on fire. More than 200 villagers have been booked for murder and obstructing police from duty. The 10 policemen have been charged with negligence and are suspended.
I'd say that at the very least, it's good that there's some murder charges and some negligence charges being filed here, because it shows that at least the local government is not in agreement with what it was the villagers and police did. They're saying this was bad. There are criminal ramifications for this.
But given the number of just blasphemy cases that there are, beating him and murdering him by setting him on fire, clearly outside of the bounds of a good behavior. But
right.
Arresting him for allegedly burning copies of the Quran because it's blasphemous.
Well, I didn't say it was all good.
Right. And just the sheer number of blasphemy cases coming out of Pakistan just sort of puts this in a very clear light to me, that this is another use of blasphemy for some other purpose.
Yeah.
So, again, I did a talk on blasphemy a couple of weeks ago. We'll be putting it online. There are things like these happening all the time. Everybody likes to think about Benghazi and like this is just something that happens every once in a while, or the Muhammad cartoons. It's something that happens every couple of years. It's pretty clear as we do the research that this is something going on a continual basis. So, yeah, please definitely look into it, and you know, we'll be following up on this as time goes on.
Even though it's really depressing to think about, it still has to be covered.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Because the thing is, this goes on all the time, but we never hear about it because it's, I guess maybe there's a cultural expectation. I don't know why. But the only way to get these things stopped is to shed light on them, is to keep talking about them, especially with people like Albert Sabre, who was doing in Egypt exactly what we're doing on the show right now, talking about atheism, talking about people who are apparently committing blasphemy.
Was there an update on him since last week when you talked about him?
He is, I believe he is out on bail now, pending appeal. And
let's hope someone rushes him out of the country, wink wink.
Seriously.
Yeah, like I said last week, I'm a big fan of the rule of law. It's an important structure of society, but when you start jailing people for speaking their mind, is it really the rule of law anymore, or is it the rule of men standing in for God?
I'm going to go with the latter on that
one. Yeah, yeah. So, we said we were done with the Mayans. However, in addition to fears spawned by the shootings in Connecticut, Lapeer Community Schools in Michigan will be closing for the holidays 2 days early due to rampant rumors regarding the 2012 Mayan apocalypse. Matt Wandry, superintendent for the district, said that the focus on the upcoming apocalypse in social media and elsewhere was becoming a distraction for students, so they aborted the winter break, essentially. Although we in the county feel reluctant to cancel school because the rumors are unsubstantiated, we feel it most appropriate given the gravity of recent events and our present circumstances, he wrote.
Yep. I think that some of the staff just wanted a couple days off.
Okay.
You know, having known some educators, I'm going to say that that seems like the most correct answer to this situation.
I don't know, because when you get days off like this for extra things.
Well, yeah, you're going to have to make them up in June, right?
Yeah, they just take them off one end and glue them on the end. So they're going to be working further into the summer, and that's no fun.
Maybe there's a legitimate Quetzalcoatl warning in Connecticut. That's
wait, wait, wait,
far
what?
Away
from... Huh?
Quetzalcoatl, the big feathered serpent? It's gonna
he's in Connecticut?
Sun.
Oh my god.
So, you know what? I understand about...
I digress.
No.
I understand about the heightened sense of security because of the shooting. So there's the constant fear of copycats. There's a lot of rumors going around. There's a lot of people making threats or sort of a heightened sensitivity when people say things that could be interpreted as threats. So I understand the necessity of that. I understand the necessity of being careful in times like this. However, to make a direct connection...
you can't use that as an excuse.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't that just furthering this ridiculous, not even Bronze Age story?
Not only that, but it's just plain lazy.
Mm. And furthermore, it's giving students the idea that these apocalypse theories must hold some weight. I mean, if the school cares about it, and they're the ones that are supposed to teach us,
then we
should care about it too. And I think that's the wrong idea for students to have. That, I mean, this, essentially, it's... In its way, it's an intrusion of religion into the public school,
right?
Where they're saying, you know, this sort of made up idea that the Mayans didn't actually have, that people came up with, you know, many centuries later, that there's going to be this great big apocalypse that there really is no actual tangible evidence for, and then basing a school policy on that and starting winter break early. I think that's just as big an intrusion as any other religious intrusion into schools. I mean, it's practically on par with a teacher-led prayer.
There's a local aspect to this too, in that there are two high schools in Gig Harbor who beefed up security again, specifically because of what happened in Connecticut, but specifically because of the 2012 apocalypse. Apparently, some student said something, and it turned into this ridiculous telephone game, and it hit other students, and then it hit the faculty. So they decided to beef up security. Again, given the circumstances that we live in this week, I understand the necessity or the perceived necessity for increased security. I'm not judging that. But then to link it specifically to a 2012 apocalypse, it seems very strange.
It is very strange.
So we've got an email. and this one's specifically to you, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
And this comes to us from Christoph from East Vancouver, and he writes, "Hey, guys, I'm a huge fan of your show. It's one of the only shows that I listen to, and most recent ones as soon as I can download it. But what I don't like is your moment of science. Science doesn't directly relate to atheism. It relates about as much as politics does, and you only talk about politics when it's directly involved with religion. It should be the same for science."
Well, I would say if atheism is your religion as such, a thing that you specifically take on faith...
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No, I have to stop you right here.
No, this is a hypothetical.
Okay.
So, if atheism is your religion in the religious sense that you take it on faith without critical thought, then yes, science has nothing to do with atheism. But if you're an atheist because you've examined the evidence and are employing critical thought and found the evidence isn't there, then you have just applied science.
Okay.
Science is evidence-based thinking, and that's an important thing to an atheist or a skeptic, that we can't just take things on faith. We do need evidence, and Moment of Science is about fostering that idea.
I have to go back to the very first days of Ask an Atheist, when we would open every show with, "Welcome to Ask an Atheist," a show about atheism, skepticism, and the separation of church and state. And specifically, skepticism in this case, when we talk about being skeptical, as in the skeptical inquirer and sort of atheistic skepticism, it's specifically using the scientific method to judge the world around us, to make sense of the data that the world provides.
Absolutely.
And if you'll notice your moments of science, you're talking about things that specifically relate to atheism. You talked about the laws of thermodynamics, which creationists use continually as some weird reason that evolution doesn't work, except their understanding of the laws of thermodynamics.
Right, the second law thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they only know the second law. They don't know the first and the third one. Granted, I don't either, but I don't make these ridiculous arguments.
Right, yeah.
And I think if you're going to be if you're going to be a skeptic, if you're going to be an atheist of the new atheism visibility movement, of sort of the branch that we're in these days, we have to have a command of these sorts of things.
And, I agree.
And I think we need to talk about them. And that's why I like the Moment of Science and stuff. That's why I encourage you to come up with these segments. The last one you did was about the Mayan apocalypse, which, again, this is a weird woo thing that people are putting out there, that is saying the world's going to end, or things are going to get more novel, or we're going to have another planet, or, you know, the Zeta Reticulans are going to come on and go down and tear the roof off this place. And in those situations, we need this data. We need this understanding in the context of atheism, in the context of skepticism, in order to basically counter these arguments.
Right. That's why the very first Moment of Science I did was about radiocarbon dating.
Yes.
And the idea there is that while radiocarbon dating doesn't tell us the age of the Earth, it does tell us the age of human artifacts within 60,000 years.
Yeah.
So we can take that information and throw the young Earth creationism sort of out the window.
Like, to give you a real-world example, people were talking about a recent near flyby of an asteroid, you know, between the orbit, you know, inside of the orbit of the moon. It was a very close, and they were saying, oh, this is the, this is Nibiru, this is Nemesis, this is Wormwood, oh my, this is gonna be the thing that does it. And then if you have an understanding of science and the understanding of, or, you know, orbital mechanics and stuff like that, you can say, one, this is not an ELE level asteroid.
Right.
This is not an asteroid. It's something like a 300 foot wide asteroid. I don't remember how big it was, but it wasn't an extinction level event asteroid.
We'd notice.
Yeah.
Obviously we'd notice, but yeah.
Well, not always. Sometimes there's, you know, asteroids out of the plane of the ecliptic or in odd orbits that we don't detect until recently. And this was one of those cases.
I meant we would notice this asteroid striking us, not that it was.
We would definitely notice. Yes. Yeah, it would be.
But it wouldn't wipe us out completely.
It would be a lot closer to the Tunguska event in Russia, in Siberia. If it landed over a populated area, we would certainly know about
it.
It would do absolutely terrible damage.
Mm-hmm.
It would not change the face of the Earth, and it would not cause the ascended masters to rise from their secret locations and begin the age of Aquarius, is what I'm saying.
Right.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to introduce a new segment to the show.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
Alright, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And I said we would be introducing a new segment to the show today, and it's only got a working title. It's called Rodeo of the Wretched.
Yeehaw!
Yes. Basically, in the wake of the shooting, and in the wake of anything that happens on Earth ever, religious people tend... religious ideologues, religious iconoclasts, people who make, people who make hay out of being religiously controversial, always have something ridiculous to say, and we really do need to talk about it. And there's just so many of them, we're sort of gonna deal with them en masse. And the first one we're gonna talk about is Mike Huckabee, who we talked about last week, and instead of saying, okay, maybe I went over the line, he doubled down. He said it's not just school prayer. He said, it's the fact that people sue a city so we aren't confronted with a manger scene or a Christmas carol. Churches and Christian-owned businesses are told to surrender their values under the edict of government orders to provide tax-funded abortion pills. And that's what causes... But he goes on. It gets worse. We dismiss the notion of natural law and the notion that there are moral absolutes and seem amazed when some kids make it their own morality to kill innocent children. We diminish and even hold in contempt the natural family of father and mother creating and then responsibly raising the next generation and then express dismay that kids feel no real connection to their families or even the concept of a family.
So he is literally blaming gay marriage? School shootings?
He's blaming abortion, gay marriage, and atheism on the shooting.
Oh, my God.
Based on exactly what here? I mean, I've heard the argument that prayers aren't allowed in school, and this, right. Apparently has something to do with the shooting, according to some pundit or other.
Yeah.
But last I checked, psychotic gunmen aren't allowed in schools either.
Right.
So I don't really see how there's a connection there.
And he brings up natural law and moral absolutes. What mm-hmm. moral mm-hmm. absolutes? When has morality ever been absolute in Christianity? You be kind to people. No, it's really not. I see the look on your face, Dan. But the thing is you're supposed to turn the other cheek. You're supposed to do this. You're supposed to do that. Unless God tells you to, then you go smite, kill, enslave, and rape. Is that moral absolute?
Well, my comment on moral absolutes when you said, well, when has morality been absolute? And so, say, sort of Inquisition era. I mean, it's about as absolutist as it gets.
I see
I didn't
where
say
you're
the
going
good
there.
Morals.
Yeah. I would just say, don't be a jerk, and everything else is, well, negotiable.
Yeah. I hear you. It's again, this is something happened. Something terrible in this country happened. You heard me last week. This really, this hurt me in a very emotional way.
We were all a bit broken last week.
Yeah, and I'm not. And but here he's seeing this as an opportunity to make political hay, to get to say that Christianity would somehow have saved this. Except if we're being honest, Mike Huckabee, when he was governor of Arkansas, was the kind of guy who would release who would release prisoners early if they converted to Christianity, which should have some resonance here in Lakewood. I'm not really want to go into it, but. That's really what it is. Our next one is an interesting one, and it's James Dobson of Focus on the Family.
Oh, that
and
guy.
He's so
still relevant?
He's no, frankly, no. He's no longer, I think, head of Focus on the Family, but he's definitely involved with Focus on the Family, and for me. I'm a fan of radio, and I love radio, and I'm also a news junkie, so I listen to a lot of news. And the news station that I listen to in Chicago, WMAQ, which is no longer there, so I can, mention it, they would have their news cycle, and in the middle of it, it would be James Dobson basically, crapping on my day. It was just in the middle of this, and I'm young, I'm a kid, and I'm listening to this, and he's like, okay, here's what's going on in the Middle East, here's what's going on with President Bush, blah, blah, the first one, blah, blah, blah. Now, James Dobson for Focus on the Family, and he's like, gay people do this, and that's terrible. And it was just, he tried to make it very family-friendly or very light, but his ideology still bled through. Anyway, and this is what he said about the school shooting.
Here we go.
And guess what? Guess whose fault it is, guys? I mean, millions of people have decided that God doesn't exist, or he's irrelevant to me, and we have killed 54 million babies, and the institution of marriage is right on the verge of a complete redefinition. Believe me, that is going to have consequences, too. And a lot of these sayings are happening around us, and somebody is going to get mad at me for saying what I'm about to say right now, but I am going to give you my honest opinion. I think we have turned our back on the scripture and on God Almighty, and I think he has allowed judgment to fall upon us, and I think that's what's going on.
I could also blame it on the fact that Rush released a new album this year.
Well,
that is just as relevant.
But this
as this.
Is what
this
they
is like. It's completely. He's just trying to find a scapegoat.
This is what he does. Is this is his personal bugbear. He thinks gays are bad. He thinks abortion is bad. He thinks he actually thinks feminism is bad. He thinks all these things are bad. And anytime anything bad happens,
he just blames it on them.
He blames it on whatever is politically expedient to do so. This is these men, Mike Huckabee and James Dobson. This is nothing other than a naked power grab. This is just an attempt to control people, to reestablish the control they thought they had on people for centuries. That's what this is.
And it's certainly not pretty.
And he's doing it through the death of children. I don't see...
If they want to talk about redefinition of morality, I would say that attempting a prophet based on anything that went on, you know, in the past couple of weeks regarding terrifying and horrible events... I would say that kind of makes you a bad guy.
Yeah. So we have a phone call, which we have to take very quickly because I've saved the best for last. We have Kyle from Polsbo, who wants to talk about science relating to atheism. So what do you got for us?
Well, I like the way that you guys define science as evidence-based thinking. Now, I see that... probably where I live, and maybe Washington State in general, it's a lot more normal to be an atheist than in other parts of the country. But
yeah, the statistics do bear that out.
I still see a lot of anti-science rhetoric. I encounter people who seem to be against science, and they think that scientists are arrogant because they think they know all the answers, and well, you haven't considered this and that, and you know, things beyond science.
So you've got a quote for it.
yes, this is from the American revolutionary Ethan Allen.
Okay.
He said, "Those who seek to invalidate reason ought seriously to consider whether they argue against reason with or without reason. If with reason..." If with reason, then they establish the principle that they are laboring to dethrone. But if they argue without reason, which in order to be consistent with themselves they must do, they are out of reach of rational conviction, nor do they deserve a rational argument.
Very nice. Very nice. And that's, in a nutshell, that's exactly what we're talking about here. So,
right.
Kyle, we're coming to the top of the hour. We do have to move on. Thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Kyle.
Oh, man. So I saved the best for last, and I'm going to do something I don't often do.
And Sam's going to rant.
We're talking
Here we go.
About... Oh, no, I rant, but I don't make this kind of rant. This is from the Pope. The Pope. Again, last week I said I'm not. I don't generally go after... I don't generally talk to Catholics about their clergy and say, why do you follow these people? I understand it's a cultural thing, but I'm starting to change my mind on that. And this is what he said during one of the most important speeches that the guy gives in the year, his Christmas speech. And this is what he said. People dispute the idea that they have a nature given to them by their bodily identity that serves as a defining element of the human being. They deny their nature and decide that it is not something previously given to them, but that they make it for themselves. He goes on to tie homosexuality to global warming and the destruction of the family. And this is what he says. The manipulation of nature, which we deplore today where our environment is concerned, now becomes man's fundamental choice where he himself is concerned. The child has become an object to which people have a right to which they have a right to obtain. Huh? Okay. I think I got that wrong. And then this. And this is where it gets weird. The freedom to be creative becomes the freedom to create oneself, then necessarily the maker himself is denied, and ultimately man is too stripped of his dignity as a creature of God. So that's what he wrote. I don't say this very often because people do it too often, and it's never accurate. But I'm going to say it here, and I'm going to back it up. You can take the Hitler... You think you can take the boy out of the Hitler youth... But apparently you can't take the Hitler youth out of the boy. This is a speech. There we
are, our first reducto ad Hitler.
Absolutely. I'm doubling down, people. And here's what it is. You know, like I said, this is not something I generally do. But the construction of this speech, if you go read it, it has very... It looks like a Nuremberg rally. I'm a little hesitant to say this, but this is exactly what it is. He constructed a conflict of a class of people against Volkish notions of decency. He says, you know, he's talking about decent Catholics and right-thinking people and moral people, and about how gay folks and stuff like that are somehow changing, you know, are somehow a threat to the decency of the people. This is something that you heard this a lot. The accusation by way of comparison that somehow gays are an environmental problem. And it's the association of people and land. This may seem like a very weak argument, but I read history. I read a lot of history. It's a subject that's been very dear to me. And this is something that he would do. It's sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, something that Mike, who's not here today because I think he's fighting with Bill Donahue, he calls it kidding on the square. He's making this passing reference and then moving on. This is something that the Pope has done here, and it's something that the bad guy in World War II did as well. And he brings up kids. He brings up the structure of the family. Every Christian person does this. This is not necessarily just the Pope, but it's just another mark.
Won't someone think of the children?
Yeah, and this is where it gets weird. Ending with the classic doublethink. This is completely doublethink. Self-determination and self-definition is something that people fight wars over. Any revolutionary war has been fought over self-definition and you know, self-labeling, right. Building an identity, building a culture. Oh man! And in many ways, it's the basis of liberty. I mean, the Federalist Papers, everything was talking about this, and here he is offhand suggesting that the idea of self-definition is inherently sinful and that this is already well understood by every right-thinking person. He's redefining what self-definition is.
He'd rather be able to define it for you.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. And this is exactly the kind of stuff that would go on in these Nuremberg rallies where, you know, something that was known by the people or that the notions were, especially in the Weimar Republic, where, you know, things were moving. There were sort of hippies back then. There was, you know, body culture stuff, and it was sort of getting in sort of a something that looked a lot like the 60s in the United States. And then he would say, every right-thinking person believes this is bad. Nobody thought it that way, but because he was influential and had a position of power, he defined the standard by which people were judged. And that's what it comes down to. And people might think that my comparison to Hitler is a little bit harsh here. And you know what? It may be. And please challenge me if you think it's too harsh. But we're talking about a man of privilege and power striking a rhetorical blow against people who are traditionally without privilege and power, but who are slowly gaining social respectability. And he's accusing them of some inherent moral failing that poisons the moral and spiritual lives of others by their mere existence and identity as a people.
I don't think that you're going overboard as far as the philosophy that's involved here. It is the same, you know, the control the people via all these tactics that you've listed.
So what, you mean gay marriage is not causing global warming? You mean that the world is not heating up because of all that hot, right. Hot, steamy gay sex?
And he's kidding on the square here. He's not making that direct comparison. But the fact that he's defining, he is a man of privilege and power. He's got an entire nation behind him. He has apparently a billion people behind him by the way they count things. And he's saying that this class of people who have been, you know, who have been killed, who have been put down for generations, are bad out of not because of what they do, but because of some inherent moral failing of their identity.
Right.
This is Der Stürmer territory. This is Stryker territory. I don't know.
I think he's probably just afraid. He's afraid of change, and he's using his pulpit to denounce people he sees as different, and...
So what else is new?
Yeah, and it's just, it's coming out of a place of fear. I read this, and I hear fear.
I can see that, I can. And like I said, I have to go back to what we say on the show all the time. and that's people are generally better than their religions. I know many Catholics. I have many Catholics in my family, you know, Irish Catholics, what do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're good people, and I love them, and I respect them. But when the guy at the head of their church says something like this and acts in this way, I don't automatically assume that they agree with this guy. But I feel like I have to ask them, what do you do in situations like this?
Hey, how would you react if one of your friends said that, or one of your family members said stuff like this?
I know exactly how I would react, and I have.
I think we've all made that reaction at least once.
Yeah.
I think with, you know, having Catholic family, which I do, what you have to sort of remember is that they're human beings. They're human beings. They disagree with you. You do have to respect them as human beings. They are people. What you can put down, though, is the idea. And as long as you make it clear that, you know, you love and respect them, but you disagree, I don't think you're stepping outside of your usual territories.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you can have a respectful conversation in which you say, I disagree with you, sir.
But I really think I'm going to have to track down some of my Catholic friends, because I have Catholic mm-hmm. friends, and do something I've never done before and actually ask them how they stand by the religion when things like this are being said and done. People in America don't like the idea. People around the world, people don't like the idea of the strong preying on the weak like
this. Right.
And I have to ask them. I understand the culture. I understand that this is what you believe. But do you really agree with this guy when he talks like this? Do you really want to back this up? Do you want to double down on this? I have to ask now. It's not something that I can just let go anymore. It's I don't know how else to put it. So I guess we'll end with a very short email.
All right.
And this comes to us from Tony from Detroit. And he writes, someone asked me who woke me up this morning. What should a response to a question like that be?
Well, Tony, who did wake you up this morning? Did you wake up? Did your alarm clock wake you up? Was it a person, an animal? I think it's a pretty easy answer.
My MacBook woke me up.
I would,
they might be giants.
I would say that, well, in
second,
my,
they might be giants
in my case, I didn't wake up. I've been awake all night. But generally, it's oscillations moderated by a quartz crystal that wakes me up. So that's really what we're talking about here. And that's all we've got time for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Dan Lombardo and Nick Kennedy. My production assistant is Casey Rochefort, as usual. The music is Chris Coleman. There is no post show today. Thank you to Christy, Danny, Anna, Bridget for helping me move. Me and Becky move. Hope you're hearing this. I'll be working with you again very shortly. See you guys next week.